Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. It's Wednesday, April 13, 2005. Today we have a public hearing on House Bill 5049, which deals with the budget for the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The agency's back for their phase two, or the budget detail portion of their presentation. It's been a little while since they've been before us. I did distribute to your offices kind of an overview to refresh your memories about what they were about, what we talked about in phase one, kind of budget detail. I'd be more than happy to go over that. Also, the agency responded to your questions from the first public hearing. Those were also distributed. They're here. I'm sure if you had additional questions for them that they'd be happy to respond to those. And the agency also is suggesting, after our conversation with them about their performance measures, they'd like to present a change to measure number
one. Well, I'm proud today.
Yes, different than yesterday.
Otherwise, we could turn it over to Ms. Dean and the agency to present, unless you'd like me to go over an overview.
No, I think that's fine. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome this morning.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jan Dean. I'm with VAS Budget Management Division. You should have a copy of my presentation in front of you. This will be a very high-level overview, and then I'll turn it over to the agency to discuss some of these issues further. On page two, the chart shows that the funding for the entire human services program area, all funds are on the left, and the general fund and lottery funds are on the right. This agency is 0.02% of the budget. It's on page three. It is part of the governor's principal budget, actually in two areas. The long-term care ombudsman acts as a liaison between long-term care residents and their caretakers, ensuring that client rights are protected. So although it's primarily in the human services principle, it also is closely aligned with the public safety principle. On page four, the agency's expenses are eligible for a federal match under Medicaid and the Older Americans Act, and general fund dollars are sent to DHS, who matches them with federal funds and returns the total to the agency as other funds, and you can see that split there. Page five. The special payment that is general fund that the long-term care ombudsman sends to DHS to be matched is 27% of the budget. If we pull that part out and look only at services and supplies and personal services, SMS is 26% and personal services is 74% of their budget. And their actual operating budget after that special payment is sent is actually $1.4 million. Page six is a historical snapshot of the agency's funding. And the general fund reduction that you're seeing there occurs because of reduction to the essential budget level. $70,000 of the agency's projected ending balance for 2005-07 was used to offset general fund costs within the 2005-07 biennium. And in addition, DAS eliminated all budget expenditures that were not completely matchable with the federal funds. On page seven, some of the issues that this agency is dealing with. Oregon's long-term care industry is growing at a rapid rate. They rely on a network of volunteers to investigate and resolve complaints and advocate on behalf of residents, and the number of volunteers is constrained by the number of their staff. Because of the funding constraints, the agency's budget has not kept pace, nor have their staffing levels with the industry growth. And then finally on page eight, again highlighting that the ending balance reduction was accomplished by reducing the special payment to Department of Human Services by $35,000 general fund, which had a corresponding impact of reducing the revenue by about $70,000.
Thank you. Questions? Nice presentation. Ms. Cup.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Meredith Cote, and I'm the director of the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, and I'm here with Kathy Walter, who is the agency's program administrator. Mr. Chair, as Deborah Manthe said, we have our Phase 2 presentation today, and we also have a proposed change to our performance measure number 1. And is there any particular order in which you'd like to hear those today?
Whatever you'd like to do is fine.
Well, let me start then with a discussion of the performance measure number 1. What I have here is the proposed change in some copies of the proposed change. But basically, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we were asked some what we thought were very good questions that helped us to look at our data in a different way. And we recognize that performance measure number 1, which in our budget document, that performance measure is on it's on page 16. And that was the percentage of non-referred complaints that are partially or fully resolved. We got into a discussion last time.
Which page 16? I'm not sure where
page 16, Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, of our primary budget document.
But under what tab?
It's numbered consecutively right through the tabs.
This one?
Right.
It would be under the agency summary tab, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yes, under the performance measure tab.
It's a graph in my book, unless we're dealing with different books.
Yep, this would be.
Page.
This one? I have three.
Presentation book. Okay.
What's your data? Dated March 15th?
Yeah.
What page are you on?
16.
Okay. Is this it? Is this what you're looking at? Is this in the other book?
I just want to make sure that do we still have questions about
page 15? I think, no, we'll Mr. Chair, I believe we're on page 15.
It's page 15. Yeah, 15. It's actually 15. Excuse me.
I believe it's also in this packet that we received. Well, this is it also, isn't it?
No. A correction. It's the document of our budget testimony that we presented on March 15th, which is in a binder. But if we don't have that...
In the appendix is the way you usually look at it. A presentation binder, it's
okay.
This format.
At the very back of
page 73.
We have page 73.
But if we don't have that, I also have the handout, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we prepared some responses to the committee on their questions about that performance measure. And I have copies of that part of our response that deals specifically with that performance measure. So that would assist you also. We can just refer to those two documents. And we don't have to deal with the primary budget presentation. So what you are receiving now is a copy of our response to the committee's questions that about the performance measure that we are talking about now, which is performance measure number 1, the percentage of non-referred complaints that are partially or fully resolved. And as you recall, the committee had a number of questions about that, about explain the drop in percentage of what looks like resolution rates. And as we started to look at the data to answer and explain your questions, we realized that in the discussion, there was some confusion by virtue of the fact that within the total number of complaints that we were looking at, we include the complaints that are either withdrawn or where no action is needed or appropriate. And what has happened over time is the handout that that you have before you, if you look at that handout on page 3 of that handout, you will see the complaints at the top, complaints were where disposition was no action needed or appropriate, have changed over time. And then in 1999, there were 6%. In 2004, there were 18%. And those are basic, what comprises most of those complaints are complaints that aren't verified. There are some, there's a mixture of complaints, but the primary number of complaints where no action is needed or appropriate are complaints where we don't verify. And what we were doing is that they were being included in the measure of complaints that were available to be partially or fully resolved. So what we had going on was there was a decline in the number of complaints that were available for resolution because there was an increase in the number where no action was needed or appropriate. And so we decided that it would be better and more easy to understand for people generally to pull those out of the measure, pull out the complaints that are withdrawn or where no action is needed or appropriate. And that is the proposed measure that we have before you today in the handout, and that is the percentage of non-referred complaints where action is needed that are partially or fully resolved. And those and action is needed because those complaints have been verified and they haven't and or they have not been withdrawn. So it's just an attempt to clarify the measure, pull out a group of complaints that we don't have any control over, which are the ones that aren't verified or where no action is or withdrawn, and to give you a pure measure that reflects our resolution and our ability to resolve complaints. And so that's what the new proposed measure seeks to do. Is that also confusing?
I'm just trying to see which one we're using before and which one.
I think I may be getting this, but I'm not sure. Give me an example of a non-verified claim or one which was withdrawn. Give me some examples of those kinds of complaints, if you could, please.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, are you talking about just any number of complaints can be withdrawn by anyone for any number of reasons? So are we focusing on just a non-verified complaint? I mean, sometimes we have a complaint, a situation, for example, in a non-verified where a resident will say a staff member stole, my Afghan. And we go in and we look at the situation and we find that perhaps, in fact, the staff member did not steal the resident's Afghan, but in fact, the daughter took that particular Afghan home to wash it for that particular week, in that week. So we have there a complaint that we have the complaint from the resident, but it was not a verified complaint. No action is needed or appropriate in that case, except, we do explain, of course, to the resident what actually happened to the Afghan in that situation.
I'll follow up, Mr. Chair. In comparison to, we find that a patient has a decubitus that has not been, it's been not resolved, it's there and occurred in a long-term care facility and has not been looked at or found. That would be a complaint that you're working on then.
Mr. Chair,
I'm getting a feel for what you're talking about here.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, in the case of a decubitus, there may be elements of abuse in that or neglect from that, and so those cases frequently are, in fact, in most cases, are investigated by Adult Protective Services because, in fact, they could have elements of either one of those. So those aren't normally cases. Those are normally cases that we would. In a situation where there was a decubitus, we would normally refer those to Adult Protective Services.
Can I suppose follow-ups?
Go ahead.
I can't get a picture of what you're dealing with here. I mean, you're talking about complaints that you know that aren't verified, they're not a real complaint, so you set those aside. But the ones you do have to work on, the ones you try to resolve, what kind of issues do you resolve there?
Mr. Chair, if I could turn you on page, see, in our appendices, one of the things that, on page 54 of our appendices, of our document of our presentation of March 15th, we have a sample of complaints made to the Salem Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman during the month of January, and that should be 2005, not 4. And we have a sample of, and part of that was to give the committee a flavor for the various types of issues that come into the agency. And, you know, one of them, the third one there says, for example, an assisted living resident was hospitalized due to stroke. The facility took him back after the hospitalization, but then said he had to leave because hospice wanted to install side rails on his bed. The family moved him out. The facility says the family didn't give a 30-day notice, so they kept the resident's deposit. That's a complaint that we would deal with in the agency. We deal with all sorts of complaints about people and their menus, their diet. We represent the residents with respect to when they are faced with illegal discharges from facilities or inappropriate discharges for facilities, where usually the representative of the resident in their informal conference. We deal with a lot of issues around lost or stolen property. We deal with a lot of guardianship, conservatorship issues, and visitation rights. And
so, what you're dropping out of this is those cases where you just can't, in a common sense fashion, say this is really a complaint.
What we do is when the facts as presented are investigated, and the facts. We are not able to verify the complaint and the facts that we established pursuant to an investigation do not verify the allegations as presented to us. That would be a circumstance where we would not verify the complaint.
And those are the ones you're dropping out of this.
Right, right.
Hey, Representative Hannah, do you have something?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You may have said this and I missed it, but we're removing 18%, which is the no action needed. And what are you reestablishing the goal at then? Because in the first presentation, it was stated that after reviewing the historical data, it was determined the target was set too high, given the increased complexity of complaints and the 18% in which no action was needed. So if you take the 18% out, what's the new goal?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, the new goal would be 95%, the target, because what we're saying is basically there's about 5% of complaints that we're just not able to resolve, and sometimes it dips to 4%, but because of the complexity of complaints, we've looked at those complaints. We just don't think we can get any closer to 100% than 95%.
Okay. Good. Next item. We're all up to speed now. Well, I don't know. Are there other questions? See, you know what? The light went out for me, and so maybe.
Yeah. They're talking.
Are you okay, Sir Moss Nesson?
Yeah, I understand.
All right. It makes sense. You remove those components that are not relevant, that are going to skew the figures, and focus on those things that are.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if the committee at any time, you know, wants a list or any kind of accounting for complaints that were either not verified or complaints where the agency determines no action is needed, we track all of that and would be happy to provide that information to you. It's not that they drop out of our system. We've just made decisions about those complaints that don't require agency action.
All right, we're with you. We can move on. Thank you very much. And I think that the action you're taking is appropriate.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm going to begin the budget detail discussion, which begins on page 30, 433, excuse me, of our presentation document. It's behind the tab that says budget detail discussion. The primary budget drivers and environmental factors with respect to our agency, as Jan Dean mentioned, one of the primary budget factors is the increasing number of older Oregonians, and specifically those that are 85 and older. And in 2005, the number of Oregonians 85 and older was 67,597. That will grow to 95,552 by 2025, which is about a 29% increase. The number beyond that, the number of long-term care facility residents will also increase. And as we've seen that since 1990, we've had a 49% increase just in the number of long-term care facility beds in Oregon, and that has increased from 28,000 beds to 41,800 beds.
What's the occupancy rate? I mean, is that assuming 100%?
Mr. Chair, it's hard to know the occupancy rates of the various types of facilities because I think nursing homes would be probably the closest, and I'm not sure where the occupancy rates are at nursing homes now. They dipped for a period of time in Oregon, and I believe they were below at some point, even below 80%. But I know that we've had closures in nursing homes, so I'm not sure where the occupancy is, the rates are. And if that's information, and I'm not sure, but I certainly would try, if the committee is interested in that, to try to get that information from seniors and people with disabilities, who'd probably be in the best position to know that that information.
Okay.
But I am just not sure. The occupancy rates sort of fluctuate over time, and
you don't need to do that. I'm weak with that. Thank you.
Clearly, a secondary driver in our budget is the the agency has to depend on the staff, and the staff does the training and the supervising and the supporting of the volunteer network. So about 74%, 73% of the operating expenses for the governor's budget are personal services, and clearly that drives the agency's costs. Another driver of the agency's costs is the number of program volunteers, and another significant, although it does not seem like it would be a significant, but another significant driver of costs has turned into the comprehensive database that the office has to maintain pursuant to its responsibilities to the Federal Administration on Aging, and the Federal Administration on Aging has reporting requirements that it imposes on long-term care ombudsman programs nationally, and so we spend a lot of time on data collection and entry. And this has been since 1995, when this database system started to be developed. It's basically been an unfunded mandate in our program, but it has we have devoted significant resources to maintaining that database, including these computer and software systems, and also the assistance in getting all of the data from all of the operatives around the state entered into that database. Some environmental factors in our program that
would you take just a moment and tell us what's in that database? What are the things that you're measuring? What I'm looking for is duplication with what may be done in other agencies and so on.
Well, Mr. Chair, with the Federal Administration on Aging, what they seek to do is that they wanted to be able to compare state-to-state data. So everything from all of the activity of our ombudsman, from the visits that they do to facilities, the time that they spend in facilities, the complaints that they work on in the facilities that are all coded by codes that are provided by the Federal Administration on Aging. All of that information gets placed in that database. And it's from that database that we derive all of our reports that we, both for our performance measure reports, but also our annual report to the Federal Administration on Aging. And Mr. Chair, if you would recall, one of the questions that was asked, I think, in our first hearing was sort of about what the data was for that's collected and what was our source for some of the data. And we gave the link to the Federal Administration on Aging and the entire National Ombudsman Report to Deborah Manthey. Which, if you have some free time, you could link on. What they do is collect all of this information, and they require every long-term care ombudsman program to provide it. So basically, every aspect of our program is tracked on this database. Every activity, everything that the ombudsman do, and every complaint that we handle.
Thank you.
Some of the environmental factors that affect our agency is, of course, the recruitment and retention of volunteers. The whole maintenance of our volunteer effort requires continuous recruitment. And fortunately, the agency is assisted in this effort by a partnership with AARP, which recruits from among its members statewide. But the agency looks at the length of service as an indicator of how well it's doing at retaining volunteers. And in 2004, the average length of service was just a little over, almost close to 26 and a half months. And what we do ask of people when they join the program is we do ask for a 12-month commitment to the agency. But we also have noticed over time that there's just changes in how people volunteer, and we also feel that in our program, that a lot of volunteers currently like the more sort of episodic volunteer experiences rather than the sort of the long continuous, like they want to volunteer for a weekend or a day and do that sporadically rather than having this continuous commitment. So we're finding that as changes in how people volunteer, as those changes occur, we also see those and they impact our ability to recruit and retain volunteers for the program. The agency continues. Another environmental factor that affects our program is rural outreach. Our agency is based in Salem, and we run a statewide program. And so we're challenged in our efforts to provide services to some of the rural areas of the state. And part of that is there's a sparse population, there's significant travel time, and it makes the recruitment and retention of volunteers more difficult. And so we find that in some of the areas of eastern Oregon, Lakeview counties, and Klamath, that the volunteer efforts are significantly augmented by agency staff in order to ensure long-term care facility coverage in those areas.
Has there been any attempt to recruit clergy as long-term volunteers?
Mr. Chair, we have had members of the clergy participate in our program throughout its history. So we have not targeted members of the clergy specifically, but we have found that through the years, many of them have passed through our ranks. Another thing that impacts our agency is that there's a... There's a lack of readily available consumer information for evaluating long-term care facilities in the state. And so we are, as an agency, we're regularly contacted at the Salem office by individuals looking for information about specific facilities And what this agency staff does is that we manually go through files of facility inspections and complaint reports and in order to respond to people's inquiries. And we believe it's a valuable service because people looking to place a loved one are really hungry for this information. But it's labor intensive, and we believe that consumers would have more immediate access if it was available to the public via the internet, and that is something certainly that we support, and that would be and preliminarily when resources were not so tight, that was something that was being pursued by seniors and people with disabilities at DHS in order to get all of that information on the internet. But we would heartily support that because it has a significant impact on our workload as more and more people are seeking information about long-term care facilities and are just not finding it readily available.
Are you personally working with them trying to encourage that?
Mr. Chair, I take every opportunity to remind them and to inquire with them that I am, that we are interested in pursuing and resurrecting those discussions. There was a work group at one time. We have been informed that it is not for lack of interest, but lack of resources that they have not pursued it. But it is very overdue, and it would be so easy to do because the information, again, is all information that is public and information, and it's all already generated. It just has to find its way to the net. And we do have that in some measure for nursing homes. At the national level, there is a website called Medicare Compare that allows people to look at nursing facility data at the national level. But we have nothing that speaks to that information with respect to our community-based care facilities. And
because of the focus of your mission, this would be a huge benefit to long-term care clients, not only those that want to compare, but because there's an inherent competition to do better when you know that there's going to be a listing and your 5 or 10 or 50 competitors are going to be listed on based on these criteria, complaints, cleanliness, satisfaction, whatever the criteria are, and who wants to be on the bottom of that list. And so there would be an inherent improvement in the facilities just because they want to compare well with their competition.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're actually turning it up a notch, and what we would be happy with is just being able to get the data that's already available, the licensing inspection reports, the substantiated complaints, just get that available. In terms of then looking at that information and developing criteria by which you would evaluate would be potentially a next step. And I'm sure that the industry would want to weigh in on that particular step as well. But clearly, the bottom line is that consumers out there, Oregonians, they need this information and they're hungry for it. And we believe that we need to provide it as a service, but we believe it would be so much easier, it would be facilitate things for the people who are able to access the internet to be able to have this at their disposal in their homes. The other issue that affects the agency's sort of budget and also how it directs its resources are cuts in long-term care services. And we saw that most profoundly in 2003 when there were some significant cuts to service priority levels and people were being told that they were going to lose their long-term care services. Some of those people were in long-term care facilities. And it was, we had to marshal we had many of our resources to be able to respond to the number of people who needed assistance, understanding their rights, what was happening to them, understanding what their recourse was, understanding what options there might be available to them once they lost or if they lost their Medicaid resources. So we found that when that happened, it caused, it had a large effect on our agency and how we deployed our resources in order to respond to all those people out there. There was lots of misunderstanding in the provider community as well about what was being done, how it was being done, how they needed to respond. So we found that, again, that affected how we deployed our staff, and we had to quickly educate people in order to be of assistance to all of these individuals. Moving on to major program changes in the past 10 years, probably one of the biggest changes most recently, as recently as 2003, is that we actually use our performance measures as part of the management of our program. We have designed a number of different management reports that are aligned with our performance measures, including cases that need first action, cases open more than 30 days, cases that are referred for adult protective services and facility visitation. And we monitor all of those, and individuals and staff are accountable for meeting the agency's performance measures. So we have really realigned how we manage the agencies, and it's very much directed performance and a strong emphasis on customer service. Other changes in the budget is that we've had small reductions in the operating budgets in both the 2003 through 5 biennium and the 01 through 03 bienniums. And if you going back to 1997 through 99, we've had staff reorganizations in order to maximize our ability to have staff in the field and being responsive both to the residents and facilities and the volunteers who are out in the field. And even before that, in 1995, we as we changed our data system for the program, what happens with data, as you probably know, is when you have data, what follows from data is accountability. Because once you have numbers and you start to look at them, people become very accountable for results. And we found that with the data that we were starting to generate, particularly in 95, in the 95 biennium, when the National Ombudsman data system first began, we found that, you know, it even trickled down into increasing the accountability of our volunteers throughout the system in terms of their accountability for visiting their facilities, for reporting to the agency, for communicating with the agency. And so that all has gotten shored up over the years.
I'm referring to that, the old maxim that where performance is measured, performance improves. And you certainly have seen that in your own agency. And that goes back to the comment, if you really want to, as an ombudsman organization, help assure to the well-being of the patients and clients, then we ought to be doing all that we can to help there be performance measurements in the facilities, because they will get better and you'll have less complaints just because the environment is better when things are measured closer. I know it's not really your job, and I've already made a note with Ms. Manthi to have us contact the agencies that have more money and more ability to do that, but your ongoing pressure, since you have a stake in the outcome, would be valuable since we move on to the next agency.
Well, data is very powerful, Mr. Chair. It also creates a lot of pressure, let me just tell you.
Right.
and
some resist it.
And we feel the pressure every day of being, you know, responsive. And by the same token, there has to be balance, because one cannot be so driven by data that you lose sight of the forest through the trees. And you have to always remember who you're serving, why you're serving, and data sometimes doesn't always explain all of that. So, you know, you sort of have to navigate those waters. But by and large, and for the most part, we have found that data has been extraordinarily helpful in our ability to manage the agency. The next section of our presentation, beginning on page 40, has to do with cost containment and program delivery improvements. And clearly one of the biggest cost controls in our agency is that our workforce is primarily volunteer. And they're accessible on nights, on weekends, when many other state services are not readily available. And the volunteer ombudsman contributed 21,739 hours of service in 2004. And the 64 friendly visitor volunteers in the program spent 2,197 hours with residents. The dollar value of the hours contributed by the program volunteers, as measured by information provided by the independent sector, is about $414,500. Other cost containments, we've always thought that we were a relatively frugal agency, and one of the things that we do, Mr. Chair, is that we rent office space at a significantly less than the state uniform rate. We also, all of our meetings, we did 218 meetings in 2004 throughout the state of our volunteers, training meetings, support meetings, and we locate free meeting space for all of those meetings. Our volunteers are not routinely reimbursed for mileage for facility visits, and we do reimburse them for mileage for trainings and but that rate is usually far less than the standard federal reimbursement rate. It's usually 25 cents to 30 cents a mile.
Representative Hannah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given that you've had some difficulty sustaining the number of volunteers and or you've had some loss in the number of volunteers, do you think you might want to see if there's a correlation between not providing enough in terms of reimbursement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, we try to be sensitive to that, and one of the things that we always ask our volunteers is if they have any special needs to let us know. And for example, in Eastern Oregon, one of the things that we do, particularly in the Pendleton, LaGrande area, we have some volunteers that we enter into specific contracts with the volunteers where we actually reimburse them because there's such a large distance between their homes and the facilities they serve. We actually reimburse them for mileage. And so we enter into some agreements with them in which we actually do reimburse them for mileage, and just for that reason. So we try to be sensitive to that among our volunteers, and if there's any volunteer that ever indicates to us that being able to that mileage or their ability to serve their facilities is somehow something they can't do because of an affordability issue or whatever, we do offer them mileage.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I just, again, to the volunteer and potentially the reimbursement, but your volunteers, they average 26 months, I think, is the number. Do you do any kind of an exit interview when they no longer volunteer to try to understand why it is either they're not volunteering anymore? I mean, what if half of them said, I'm not volunteering because I don't get reimbursed, or try to ascertain why they're not continuing in the program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, absolutely we do. We found that most recently in looking at, I think it was it 2003 or 2004 volunteers, that about 45% of the people that resign for health reasons or either their own or the health of someone close to them, or it's a move out, moving out of state. So that was about 45%. The other 55%, it's a range of things. And to date, we have never had anyone who has said that mileage reimbursement was an issue for their resignation. That has never been offered to us at this point. But your point, Representative Hanna, is well taken, considering as we look at what's happening at the pump right now, and we are certainly in tune with that. And if it has, we will have to make adjustments if it does have an impact on our volunteers, because gas is getting out of sight, as we all know. Just in closing, in our cost containment, whenever staff travels, one of the things that we try to do is always combine several objectives into our trips around the state, and we also use cost as a primary consideration in all of our supply and purchasing decisions in the agency. In terms of program delivery improvement, we sort of outlined those in the previous section, and again, the biggest one is our implementation of performance-based management in the agency and using data to increase accountability within the program. We also are constantly reviewing our volunteer ombudsman certification program, and we have redesigned that, and we also ask that volunteers take on a minimum of 100 beds when they sign up for duty, so to speak. And so we've actually increased sort of the minimum assignment that ombudsmen take in the program. On page 42, discusses some of our professional services and purchasing contracts. And the agency entered into two professional services contracts that totaled about $3,500 in the 03-05 biennium. And both of those were for speakers for our statewide training conference, one in the fall of 2003 and the other in the fall of 2004. And the other one gets to the database issue that we were talking about earlier. The agency purchases software support services from Social Entrepreneurs, Inc. to develop the reports that pull data from our database on ombudsman activities, visits, and cases. The agency plans on spending about $4,900 and $4,950 in 2003-05 on those services, and this is higher than in the past because the agency has had to change the program used for data collection, and the standard reports have to be rewritten for the new system. But we expect that we will be spending about $3,300 on software support services for our data system in the 05-07 biennium. The agency does not have any major budgetary issues, but we have included in the appendices a chart showing our expenditure history, and those are on page 87 in the section on appendices. If the committee has no further questions, I will proceed to essential and policy packages. And does the chair, is it the chair's pleasure that I should go through all of the policy packages? Is that what you,
I'm interested in the one that the governor did not include, but so I guess the answer is yes.
Okay, they begin on page 45. The governor's recommended budget includes five essential packages. I think it says four, but I believe that there are five there. One is is a more a standard package. That's package number 010, and that adjusts the pension bond contribution, mass transit tax, and unemployment assessments for the agency. And then package 030 adjusts services and supplies budget for inflation and the Department of Administrative Services price list, because I understand that those are pretty standard packages. On page 46, package 050, fund shifts revenue reductions. In the 2005-03-05 biennium, the agency used $15,000 other funds from the beginning balance. The 03-05 governor's balanced budget is where this fund adjustment came from, and that budget used $15,000 from the agency's beginning balance to offset a like amount of general fund dollars. So
you know what, these kind of stand, they're on their own, and we can understand them. Would you go ahead and skip down to package 101?
48. That's on page 48.
What is your understanding as to why this is not included in the governor's recommended budget? Is it strictly a financial thing? I mean, the facilities have increased. The staffing hasn't increased since 1990. The goal is to help assure that long-term care is properly met. If your percentage, your proposal is correct, then there's substantial increase in the number of visits to all of the various kinds of long-term care facilities. Help us understand what's really going on here.
Mr. Chair, the agency has, through the years, as we've seen the growth in facilities, the agency has tried various ways to deal with the growth. We've tried all sorts of ways to redeploy our volunteer workforce, and when we come down right to it, really the crux of it is that in order to be able to facilitate an expansion of our services, we need more staff. And so this was a package that we put before the governor, and I suppose I must turn to Jandine from DAS to explain the rationale for why this is not in the governor's budget.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Jan Dean. This is a very well-run agency with an important mission, does very good work, but in the end it did come down to the financial constraints that the state is under at this time.
So. Okay. Right. Question. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dean, what on package 101, what is the actual cost of the increase for the two long-term care ombudsmen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, if you look at page 49, the package is broken out as far as the various elements. I think the personal services, which would be the staff itself, would be the...
If I just might add, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, the total general fund expenditure would be $206,700.
Say that one more time, please.
The total general fund expenditure for that package is $206,700.
It's 2 years, two people.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
The service and supplies correlates to the two new people within that package?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, yes, that would include office space and... Kathy Walter just informed me, additional volunteers in the program, supporting additional volunteers is also factored into that, the service and supply portion of that.
Follow up again.
Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Office space, the space that you currently have, has room for these folks, or you would add additional rent?
We would probably, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, have to add a small amount of additional rent.
At the current $1.18?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, yes, that's correct.
Ms. Dean, can you substantiate what the difference in rent would be? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, no, I do not, but we can find that out.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Hanna. The special payment portion of that, again, can you, of that package?
Can you give us a breakdown of the $373,063 as to what goes to service supplies, rent, salaries, those kinds of things, or do you have that? LFO may have that. Probably not.
Well, they.
Right. Okay. Well, Ms. Maybe you can give us kind of what do you know about the breakdown?
Mr. Chair, other than what's on the page, I don't have anything at my disposal since it wasn't part of the governor's recommended budget. I did not analyze this package. So, I can certainly do that.
So, we do have kind of a breakdown presently, $192,000 for personal services and then service and supplies. Which of these three would include rent and facilities? Special payments or service and supplies?
Services and supplies. The special payment, I believe, is the payment of general fund to the Department of Human Services so that they can then get the federal fund match. So it's not really a program cost, the special payment portion. It's the funding mechanism that they use.
So normally, if there was no match, the $83,000 would be part of either personal services or service and supplies?
Well, actually, if there were no match, Mr. Chair, it just wouldn't be here, and it would increase. If you wanted to have the same staffing level, it would increase the amount of general fund you would need to fund the package. Or,
well, it is already. It's under a general fund, not other funds, and so it's part of the general fund.
Right.
So where would it fit into this expenditure?
Mr. Chair, by paying that $83,181 in special payment general fund to DHS, the agency gets the amount you see in the other funds. So this payment, the special payment will generate the revenue so that they can make these expenditures. If they didn't have the $83,181, they wouldn't have this.
Okay. All right.
I'm
sorry, but I want to understand that. So the $83,000 generates the $110 and the $56?
Yeah. By going back to DHS.
By going back through.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does get spent, and so where does it get spent?
It will get spent, Mr. Chair, as personal services and services and supplies. So these would be really your totals. Under total funds for personal services and SMS would be the real cost in the operating budget.
All right. Committee, have you any thoughts about whether or not an agency that's had a 49% increase, no increase in staff, could get from 160 to 200 additional volunteers, let's increase in number, so another 40 volunteers and substantial increase in examinations of all of the long-term care facilities ought to be looked at?
Mr. Chair, yes.
I just want to march up a hill by myself.
No, I think we need to look at, and I can't remember where they came on the prioritization list, but, those are things that we need
to look at. Okay, we'll take a look at. Certainly it's going to be ultimately the co-chair's call, but they have, we use a sub-chair system so that we can flesh out information that gives them additional thoughts in reaching the co-chair's budget. So, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have a succinct answer, but it's two words. And the first one, I can't use at the dais. It starts with a H and ends with a, I think it's an L, and then a yes. And these guys can do this. I think this is a very valid area for us to explore, and not only explore, but I will advocate for this.
There may be real reasons why it doesn't work, and so we ought to look at the prioritization, and we'll see, but it ain't over till it's over. Anyway, is there anything further? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I may not understand exactly this process. However, I would recommend that this committee schedule a work session for the purpose of approving this budget, including the policy package 101.
You've just crossed the line. your recommendation. What we really need to do is go back and discuss with those who make the ultimate decisions whether or not that is going to happen.
Okay. I would second, if I could, Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah's motion to take you, I, and Representative Hannah to the co-chairs, discuss passionately and advocate for this policy option package.
I think, you know, as far as the record, we don't need to make further records. We all understand where we stand. We can move on.
I'm sure that's what Representative Hannah said. I just was clarifying that for the record.
I don't want to create false hopes or anything. I just think that as a subcommittee, when we find things that make sense, that we ought to make that information and that feeling available to others. Senator Bates.
Well, thank you. This is nothing for anyone to do with right now, but I'm going to ask this group to consider this over the next 18 months and come back and think about this. Oregon has an unusual, compared to other states, system for the care of the elderly. A great deal of our care takes place in the home, more so probably than any other state. And we're pretty static as far as residence care and long-term care and nursing homes. And the area we're going to see grow the most, I believe, is going to be in the home care. We're going to get more and more complaints about that. We're getting complaints about changing levels of survivability, people taking on and off programs. We're seeing that already. These people need someone they can call. It's a non-government, it's a government agency, but it is their champion. And we don't have that right now. And I would ask you to consider, while your mission has always been for individuals who are in residential care or foster care or assisted living facilities or extended care facilities, that's always been your mission before, to consider expanding your mission. I understand that would take more of a budget, more people, more volunteers, but it would seem a natural growth for your agency considering where we're going in the next 10 or 15 years in this state and the need we're going to have some way of looking at those people's needs and the concerns we have about those people.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, your points are extremely well taken, and as the director of the agency, I have no resistance at all to considering the possibility of expanding the mission. I know, as I indicated earlier, Ohio is one state I know that has expanded the Ombudsman program into home care. It would probably take some support from the Department of Human Services and the Governor's Office in order to consider that. But certainly, I have no problem looking at that, and I think for all the reasons you've stated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd really like to see you come back and give us a report in that in 18 months. We don't need a budget note, just a discussion. Okay.
Good point.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
This is related to your prior question. Does the agency have the capacity to do policy option package 101? And it's just in this little exchange is an affirmation that yes, they can do 101, because here we are from the dais, and if it was another agency or another commission or whatever, we'd at the very least be insisting on a budget note or that it be written up in the budget report. And for these guys, it's just, hey, how about doing this? This is a good idea. Yeah. I mean, they'll do it. And it's the spirit of the relationship and the way you guys do business that allows Alan or Senator Bates to make a request, you to accede to it, and we have confidence that it's going to happen. So thank you. Thank you for doing what you do and how you do it.
I'm thinking no. The only other issue. Where is this budget?
Are there other questions that this committee has for this agency? You've been very thorough. We appreciate the good work you're doing. We believe that you are running a lean machine and that you need additional resources. Whether or not those resources can be forthcoming depends on a lot of other factors. We have a limited amount of resources, and so everything that goes over what was anticipated has to come away from something else. And so, you know, we will have to take all that consideration. But actually, I think that we could adjourn at this time, and except for those people who would like to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate it.
Just check this now. See if there's an assignment. Do you have some other?
You have testing? I'm sorry.
We're just going to check.
Jumping again.
If you need.
I got stuck.
Get with the program.
I give these people a high five, five stars, doing a great job at work. We do. We're convinced.
Well, these people are all against the program.
Oh! Didn't realize that.
Oh, wrong column.
Okay, Mr. Chair, this might be time for your speech about the attorney that's pleading his case, and the judge says, I accede to your point, and the guy keeps talking.
This came up, just to mention to you, there was a judge who, there was a very well-prepared attorney who was very young, and he was going to give everything that he prepared, and the judge had already decided that he was going to rule in his favor, and so now he's wasting the time of the court. And so the judge, after he went on, leaned over and he says, would you like to continue your plea, or would you like me to rule in your favor? And so he said, I'm finished, Your Honor. And so he sat down. And so we are delighted to hear from all of the four who have signed up in favor of this. If you feel like it's important for you to come forward, but you have a pretty good sense of where we stand as a committee. And with that in mind, we now would turn time over to Dolores. Is it Hubert?
Representative Richardson, I think you've just probably said enough. I have only a few comments to make, if I may, please. I am an ombudsman, 13 years. It's a wonderful job. I can't say that I would do anything else. The demographics you already know. The tsunami is coming forward like you can't believe, the numbers of aged. In my 13 years, I have gone from simple things that I dealt with to many, many complex things.
Sound like a parent.
I can't tell you how complex. We won't go into it here. It's not printable in public forum. But also, the numbers of age-related things are now with 25 and 30-year-olds, not just 60-year-olds. They're the young disabled that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. I dealt with also what Ms. Cody talked about as the Medicaid cuts. I had five in one facility that I serve. I serve three in Gresham nursing facilities who had Medicaid benefits cuts. And it was hell for them trying to figure out what was going to happen to them. Were they going to be on the street? Where were they going to go?
The ultimate result was what with them?
I think many of them were reassessed at a higher level, which allowed them to stay within the system because there had been inaccuracies in the assessment.
Did any of them lose their benefits?
We had some that did lose their benefits, yes. We had one that even went so far as the Ninth Court of Appeals. I'm not quite sure of the outcome of that, so I don't want to speak to that. But I know that what's coming with the Medicare Modernization Act, where we have at least 50,000 long-term care people, seniors, older adults, you're going to have more problems than you know what to do with when it comes to trying to deal with that implementation.
Oh, absolutely.
And
we haven't even looked at
that thoroughly
yet.
So I know that from the Medicaid cuts that we saw and the problems, we are going to have many more of these 50,000 who are in long-term care right now who are going to need our services as ombudsman. We need your help, and I hope that you can plead that to the Ways and Means.
Well, it's not necessarily a Ways and Means issue alone, but we understand that by the summer we have to come up with a way to deal with the reality that in the last quarter of this year we're going to have to visit with all of those seniors or qualified Medicaid people who are receiving prescription benefits,
right.
have them sign up,
right.
get prescription
right.
verifications on an individual basis so that they can qualify for the Medicare Modernization Act.
Right.
It's like going to be a huge logistical problem.
And there is no dollars assigned to it by the federal government. So it's going to be part of the state's problem. And we, as the one of the agencies visiting in these facilities, are likewise going to be hit with many, many questions. How are we going to be able to help them? We need hands to be able to do that.
We're just going to have the volunteers do this.
We need more help if you're going to do that. But I wanted you to be aware how really intense it is out there in the field.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate your time.
Rick Bennett.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP. You yourself, Mr. Chair, and the members of this committee have made all the points that I wanted to make. We strongly support the position that or discussion you've had here. We think this is an excellent program. Good use of state dollars, well leveraged both with federal dollars and with volunteer time, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Ruth, and I can't... Shepherd, excuse me.
Shepherd.
Ruth Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I too will be brief and will emphasize my long-term support of that long-term care program. I remember when Governor McCall made the first appointment, and the necessity for it was huge then, and now we've projected the population growth and its rapidity. I want to give my strong support to that program, at the same time saying that I believe that it touches on a subterranean anxiety that we all have about quality of care. And the kind of confusion that reigns when we try to figure out how we're going to get a hold of that. And I have a real concern with the home care issue that was just recently brought up, and how do we flag that, and how do we put an orange alert on it that's different than a pink alert? And what evidence is actionable, for instance, and how and when do we intervene? I think those issues are legitimate to the financing of long-term care. And my only specific thought is that the occupancy rate was discussed here a little bit, just briefly. There does seem to be a correlation between occupancy rate and the quality of care. To shorthand that, almost every facility is likely to be a little low on funds at the end of the month, and the client is likely to get a thin soup. When it's really a continuing financial situation for the provider of care in a nursing facility, for instance, you're going to have staffing that's fragile and maybe doesn't meet the standard. You're going to have all kinds of corners cut, and the concerns that we need to have right before us is that the occupancy rate does give you some index as to the cash flow income of the month. And the cash flow income, if you follow this reasoning, has to do quite a bit with the quality of care. And I think we need to spend a lot more attention, and because of the dollars, if not the clients themselves.
Thank you. That's difficult to do, actually, because what you can end up having is so many criteria and that you overregulate, when what we really want to do is focus on the outcomes, and that is good care, you know, and a proper environment, those kinds of things.
Maybe we could trade the number of regulations so that we deleted some.
I would be delighted to receive a list of those which are no longer needed. Thank you. May Dash? Hello there.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mae Dash, and I represent the Alzheimer's Network of Oregon. I also probably should say that I have been a volunteer in the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program for a number of years. not as a certified ombudsman. I have immense respect for them, but as a member of one of the local committees that recruits and screens volunteers. And in that role, I have coordinated the Lynn Benton Friendly Visitor Program, which has been very successful since it was introduced in the state. Earlier this month, the Alzheimer's Network delivered a memorandum to each of you, and we emphasizing our strong support for the program. And rather than reiterate what we said, what we would like to do is place it into the record with this brief memo. We do want to stress that the agency's very professional staff and the volunteer certified ombudsman are really of immense help to persons with Alzheimer's and related disorders. They make up about 65% of the people in long-term care. Most of them have no visitors. Friends and family often stay away. The reality is really sad because persons with dementia no longer recognize them or are unable to communicate with them in a meaningful way, if at all. Frequently, the ombudsman then is the only person who is there independently from the outside to look out for the best interests of the resident who is cognitively impaired. And we just really appreciate what the program does for the people that we serve, looking out for the people that can no longer speak up for themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a tremendous service.
So I would give this to you, I guess.
Please. Is there anyone else who would like to testify today? Please come forward. We would hate to not have a unanimous presentation of all in attendance.
Good morning. I'm Phyllis Rand, and I'm a member of the Long-Term Care Advisory Committee that advises the Long-Term Care Ombudsman's Office. And I've been a member of the committee for over 5 years, and have seen, as time goes on, the shortage of money that always seems to be processed during the budget process. And there really isn't anything more for me to say because the committee has really, I think, seen the importance of what the program does. But I just wanted you to know that as a member of the advisory committee, I am here today to support them.
Thank you for your encouragement, your support, and your service.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. Are there any other matters that need to be brought up? Seeing none, committee members? Committee member?
We're down to one.
Any objection to adjournment? Seeing none, we're adjourned. Thank you very much.